Okay, welcome back. All kinds of strange things going on now. Almost really to a point where it is to a large degree unbelievable for those of us who remember how things used to be and how they might have been, because they're not that way anymore. A lot of people, I talked to a real nice gentleman today about vitamin D. We're going to talk about vitamin D during this hour, too. And we're going to mention a little bit about ivermectin. We're going to talk about supplements and things. There are so many people out there pushing this line or that line of supplementation as being the great answer, the ultimate detox. We're going to get rid of that mRNA. We're going to get those spike proteins out of your body. All you have to do is pay me $150 a month for my supplements out of my superstore, and you'll be on top of the world. No, it doesn't work that way. Supplements are not the answer. They're very important, but they're not the answer. Because in many ways, there is no answer. Because what you're up against, if we're talking about the so-called vax, we're up against a biological weapon that was constructed by people we have mentioned on this program a number of times over a number of years, and these biological weapons are doing precisely exactly what they were designed to do. They are an unqualified success, and it is a deadly success at that. So can you take supplements and reverse these shots? No. Can you take supplements and mitigate some of your symptoms in that you've been wounded or injured? Yes. How much depends on the individual. It's a very difficult thing out there right now. For those who are aware, at least semi-alert to what's going on, what's being done to them, what's been done to them, and there are many people who have taken these shots now who have woken up, and they're really beside themselves. They don't understand how they could have been so dumb or uninformed, but it's not their fault. We don't blame anyone, basically, because the amount of information is being bludgeoned into people constantly, but you've got to get these shots, and well, it's past its peak. But it's still going on, and they're still giving shots, and people are still trusting their alleged government. And that would be, number one, the biggest mistake they could make. We no longer have a government. We've been through this before. All right. Are you there, little girl?
I'm here.
See, everyone, all the feminists are going crazy now. How dare you say that? No, that's a term of endearment, and it's okay. She's a wonderful woman and a great scientist, and you know what she's done for all of us for the last, well, we're in our third year now. So there we are. Warnings about our pets. We all have our pets, our best friends, and we've talked about the difficulties of veterinarians and what they're going through, and the issue of fleas and ticks is going to become very pronounced here in the next few weeks as we get into spring a little further. It's hard to believe spring. It was snowing here today again. Spring was last Monday. Did you know that? I didn't know that until last night.
I sort of knew it.
How do you
winter
sort
went by
of
fast. We had a very, very mild winter in this area, which was not what they were predicting.
They did give you a prediction that didn't validate, huh? Interesting.
Oh, it was supposed to be very, very cold and brutal, and we were going to be, you know, priced out of the heating
oil market.
I sort of remember that.
Yeah. All right. Well, predictions are a dime a dozen. How many of them comes actually to pass? Not that many anymore. Things are too volatile now and seemingly out of control. Chaos rules, but does it? It's the chaos that's been created by the controllers who want to put us in the box, and it's called a kill zone, and they want to get rid of most of us. That's their wish. That's their game. You all know that. Okay, pet chemicals. The most obvious example is probably something called Heart Guard. Not necessarily bad-mouthing only that one. But the idea of trying to protect your dog or cat, especially your dog, from heartworms by making your dog or cat a walking toxic laboratory of essentially deadly insecticides is crazy. It's completely crazy. It doesn't make sense. What else are you going to do, though? What are your options? I don't know what the options are to try to protect your dog from heartworm, but I do know that giving your dog and cat, either orally or putting the drops on the back of their, Where is it? Just below the shoulders where the dogs get it, or the cats, or by their tail? I forget.
In between their shoulder blades.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and when you give your cat or dog the drops on their shoulder blade area and it goes into their system, well, tell our in case our listeners don't know, and some don't, tell them what that does to the animal, the health of the animal. What does that really do?
Well, it's a low-level poisoning of the blood, so that when the parasite bites the animal, instead of ingesting a healthy meal, it's ingesting a toxic meal. And these are typically neurotoxic agents, chemicals, that are designed to paralyze the nervous system of the insect. The problem is it can, on some occasions, not that rarely, fairly commonly, also affect the nervous system of the animal. And this method does not prevent these parasites from actually biting the animal. It doesn't repel them.
That's really important. Did you hear what Erica just said? This comes from a top-level scientist. Remember that, and that your vets aren't going to tell you this. The fleas and ticks still bite. Go ahead.
They still bite, and the advantage is that they bite, and then these parasites should die, and so they won't come into the house with them and infest your house. But at what cost to the animal? And in some studies, there are varying types of these nerve agents, I would call them, that people are using. They're not all the same. Ivermectin is one of, I believe there's like maybe three or four different types. But they all have some degree of toxicity. And with the ivermectin with dogs, it's required that the dog be tested for that MDR1 mutation, because there are certain breeds of dogs that have a genetic polymorphism where they don't process these chemicals normally, and they can be severely poisoned and die from them.
They can. Give them the little limerick. What's the little rhyming limerick?
White feet don't treat. So if your dog is one of these breeds that has white feet, for example, collies, some of the herding dogs, that's a good rule of thumb to remember that dog is probably susceptible to toxicity from the ivermectin type class of drugs. But veterinarians will test that routinely now in any dog before prescribing ivermectin. With the other ones, the front line is known as fipronil. There's no testing for that. That's a different class. But,
are toxic. What was that name, please?
Fipronil.
Spell it.
F as in Frank, yeah. I-P-R-I, fipronil, N-I-L, fipronil.
Okay, that's close enough. Fipronil. Okay. All right. So if you go to your vet and you, it would be kind of a little test, wouldn't it? White feet don't treat. See what your vet says. I wonder if they even react to that one. Or is it common in vet school? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But it seems to apply to cats, too, because once upon a time I had a tuxedo cat with white feet, and the veterinarian gave him a HeartGuard tablet to take, and he was pretty messed up from it. Just this little chewable tablet.
They get heartworms too, cats?
They can. It's rare. But I think in this case it was used for just general parasite, anti-parasite. Uh-huh. And HeartGuard is ivermectin. So that was, years ago when it first came out, it was first being used in animals, and they didn't have this test. They don't have the test for cats, at least to my knowledge, for that mutation. But
right,
they do
the
have it for
again.
Dogs.
One more time.
It's a test for, it's MDR, multi-drug resistant 1, MDR1. That's the genetic mutation that causes an increase in susceptibility to neurotoxicity from ivermectin.
Got it.
And people can have that type of mutation also, and which is a concern and should be taken seriously. Even though in general ivermectin is very safe, but in some people, if it gets into the brain or the central nervous system, it's going to be problematic.
Okay, We have a little video clip we're going to play now that deals with flea and tick medications. How long do we want to run with this? I've got it queued.
It's just a couple minutes. We mentioned this last week, earlier this week, pertaining to the incidence of dogs in the UK, in Wales, in summer of 2021, shortly after the vax had been rolled out in earnest. And these dogs that were spending time at the shore were getting sick, and nobody knew why.
Lots of them.
Lots of them. It was an epidemic, and it continued right through all of 2021 into 2022. I don't know if they ever really did determine what it was, but they did. Some environmentalists tested the waters in that area and found that the waters were contaminated with high levels of these various types of pesticides used as flea and tick treatments in animals.
All right. What about the whales? You want to mention anything about that?
Whales? Like an orca?
We had dead whales on the beach.
Oh. Well, yeah, that happens somewhat regularly, doesn't it?
They were finding insecticides in the whales, weren't they?
Were they? I hadn't heard that. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, this stuff is permeating everything.
No, I know the story. I swear the story had lab results showing very high levels of some of these commonly used, insecticides in veterinary medicine.
I believe it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Here's this little video clip. Let's take a listen.
There's a whole bunch of research. In fact, this isn't the first time we're seeing fipronil in the news, even this year. Check it out. 5 months ago, The Guardian posted an article, Pet Flea Treatments Poisoning Rivers Across England. I had a whole bunch of environmentalists and friends send me this study. The new study was published in the Journal of Science and Total Environment. What the scientists found was that when people are putting these products onto their pets or giving them these chewables, and the animals are going into the lakes and into the rivers, these products are getting into the water. In fact, 4,000 samples were collected. 99% of the samples had fipronil in them. Not just that, but they were at 38 times higher the legal safety limit, which is a huge problem destroying the environment. According to the scientists, check it out. One application, the size of a quarter. In fact, the quarter is even bigger than this application. I had no idea. The environmental.
He's got a little tube of the liquid insecticide for the application of the pet, and he's showing a 25-cent piece, which is about the area that the liquid in the little tiny tube covers when you do the application. That's what he's doing.
Told me that one applicator has enough pesticide to kill 60 million bees globally.
Wow. Hold on. There we go. All right. 60 million bees can be killed with the amount of insecticide in one of those little plastic tube applicators. One treatment, one time.
So this might flood people onto other products. There's some other popular products onto the market. So you might be seeing things like Bravecto, NexGard, Simparica, Credelio, Revolution. Isoxazoline is used in a lot of these products, and this has been a huge topic all last year. I know the problem is with the pandemic, it literally suppressed a lot of news. Go to the FDA, the Food and Drug Inspection Agency in America. Check it out. This is for veterinarians and pet owners. Fact sheet for pet owners and veterinarians about the potential adverse events associated with isoxazoline flea and tick products. This is a huge problem that not a lot of people know about. So if you take your brand of flea and tick product, you Google the FDA, odds are this article will pop up. Check it out. Their words, not mine. Isoxazoline products have been associated with neurological adverse events like seizures. I know that we posted a little trailer to this prior, and people were posting in there that their dogs were having seizures and suffering all of these reactions. I am sure in the comment section right now, people are going to say the type of issues that their pets have had. Dysbiosis, like leaky gut, was occurring. Dogs and cats all of a sudden developing like allergic type reactions. elevated liver enzymes. How many people after this, like, they go back to their vet and they're like, hey, man, you got elevated liver enzymes, and they can't correlate it to some of these projects. So products. So a huge heads up for people. Now, you might be saying, I've used this product. I haven't had any problems. What's the big deal? Check it out. This is a peer-reviewed study that was done last summer. Survey of canine use and safety of isoxazoline parasiticides. Look at the highlighted section here on the bottom. When any flea treatment was given, adverse events like reactions were reported for 66% of the respondents in this peer-reviewed study. 2,700 plus people filled out the study, pet parents, who used these products on their dogs and on their cats. 66% of their pets had a reaction.
Now, those are the reactions that we feel or he feels can be directly tied to these products. There are probably a lot of other things that weren't tied to these products. You cannot poison, which is what you're doing, your best friend, your little friend who depends on you for his or her safety, her well-being. You can't do that. You've got to figure another way. You have to come up with another way. And I'm not convinced that a lot of vets would bother to take responsibility for the damage that these products are doing. They wouldn't admit it. Now, they'd say they're government approved. There's no problem. The dose is so low. Don't worry about it. Unfortunately, vets, like doctors, like people, lie. They just will. If it's good for business, they're going to do it. And that's sad. And I'm not saying vets don't work hard and they're not committed to their professional ethics and standards. Most are. But some aren't. You have to be your pet's advocate. Your pet cannot tell you that he or she feels lousy after getting this treatment.
Yeah.
So it's up to you. It's on you. And you have to be almost psychic about your pet.
You have to be tuned
if you're going to use these run-of-the-mill, standardized treatment procedures. You cannot do it and just walk away. You're taking on a big responsibility. It angers me a great deal to know what I know about this stuff. It's not good.
I think the products exist because there was a demand for them. There still is a demand for them.
People
want pets
too.
That are
they're convenient.
Yeah. They don't want them bringing bugs into the house, and this is a quick and easy solution.
All right, so there you go, dear friends. I hope you take that real seriously and consider that you are your pet's guardian. You're his or her protector. And what you get back is well worth any effort you put out there. Okay. Iron. I'm going to talk a little bit about iron now and the idea that when we were all kids, we were told that you needed iron. You have to have iron. So they would put extra iron in your grape nuts flakes or whatever, and you'd be getting dosed with iron all the time. Well, we're back to another issue with iron, and people actually now, apparently, infusing iron to give them a higher iron count, which is exactly the opposite of what you should be doing. Iron is very dangerous, and we've spent time on the program explaining why and how that is more so now than ever. So let's go into the iron thing a little bit here. Go ahead.
Do we want to read this? These couple of readers as an intro?
Sure.
Low hemoglobin?
That. Yeah, let me do that. Okay, that's the underlined one? Oh, no, that's
yeah.
D. Is that vitamin D? All right. You sure? That's the one
you
underlined?
Let's do iron. No, let's do iron. Low hemoglobin.
Okay. All right, let me get to that. Did I get this? What's the title on the email?
I sent it as a file.
All right, give me another hint.
Let's see. Readers?
I don't know if I got that. I got readers, yeah. Is it in the readers?
Yeah. Click on the file and it should be in there.
Oh, that's the kind of file you're talking about. thought you were talking about a sound file for some reason. All right, I got it. Cognitive, low hemoglobin. All right, we got three.
Yep.
Low hemoglobin. Okay. All right. Go ahead and start off. Let's go.
Okay. Someone says, I have a friend who had the COVID shot, had a blood clot in the intestine. Part of his intestine died. He went through surgery, but is having a hard time recovering, as we would expect. His hemoglobin level is in the single digits, he said. I need info on low hemoglobin and the COVID injections. Can someone please help?
All right, and the response there, first response, he had two shots. The first gave him a bad reaction, but he still got the second shot because he did not want to lose his job and not be able to support his family. His wife got her first shot and had a bad reaction, and so she refused the second. His wife left him just before he had the intestinal problem where some of his bowel had to be surgically removed. She left him. He basically is on his own now, dealing with this major health problem, and now a divorce on top of it. Wow.
There's misery everywhere. Okay, and another last one. I just watched a video last night with Maria Z. She was interviewing a woman who does blood analysis. The woman said that her clients have to take iron, I believe, for their hemoglobin. She said one of her clients has to get iron infusions. Well,
all right. Is that the first time we've seen iron infusions in print? I think it is.
It could be. It could be.
But it is very disturbing. Go ahead.
Well, we have an epidemic now of people who are becoming anemic, and they are under the impression that these people are under the impression that they have iron deficiency anemia, when in reality, it's what they call an anemia of chronic infection or chronic inflammation. And this is natural for the body to remove as much iron as it can from, in this case, the blood, to protect it from invading microorganisms, because these microorganisms need iron to proliferate. And what it does, it will withhold the iron and sequester it into various organs and tissues, most notably the liver. But it can also end up in, the brain, the heart, the kidneys, the joints. So adding more iron to a situation like this will be disastrous. Probably a better solution in the short term would be to try a copper supplement, because quite often it's really a deficiency of copper that may be creating this what appears to be iron deficiency anemia, but it's quite often copper. Copper is needed to regulate iron. Without copper, you will not have proper iron metabolism.
What form are we talking about here of copper?
Just your typical dietary supplement of copper. It's very cheap, readily available. Okay. Doesn't have to be anything special. I mean, some of the amino acid chelates are probably preferred, like a copper glycinate. But that might correct the problem. It does work in some people. The other thing that may be contributing to this is the excessive intake of supplemental vitamin D. And we've talked about this before.
Right.
Vitamin D, high levels of it will antagonize vitamin A. And when you don't have enough vitamin A, you're not going to be making ceruloplasmin, which is needed for copper absorption and transport. So I don't know to what extent. I mean, people have been on this bandwagon of high-dose vitamin D now for 3 years, and
we're
this may be coming back to bite them.
10 to 15, 20,000 units a day, many people are taking.
Yeah.
That's not recommended from our perspective at all.
Right.
It's just not. It's not a good idea. And when they some people will say, oh, I was tested for vitamin D and my levels are very low. Well, there's a reason for that, because they're not testing for the active form. They're testing
for
a passive form of vitamin D, and it's not what you want to look for. You want me to read any of this that you underlined?
Well, I'd rather just finish up on this iron thing. People are going to run into trouble thinking that iron is the problem here or a deficiency of iron. It's rare to have a true deficiency of iron. I mean, if you've had mm-hmm. blood loss, okay. But it would be prudent to test first to determine that. Low hemoglobin could also be due to not having the components to build heme. We know that NAD is a part of that. Copper certainly is a part of that. There's other B vitamins that are required to assemble heme. I mean, rushing out to take iron is not the best idea. A lot of these people have sky-high ferritin levels, which is an indication that the body is withholding iron. It's putting it away in storage. And okay. iron is very toxic. It's a reactive metal, and we don't lose it. We don't lose it other than through bloodletting. Really,
it doesn't
we don't have any mechanism.
No.
So you don't want to really be accumulating high levels of iron in the body. I see a lot of people complaining of joint pain now, which can be an indication that the iron is accumulating in the joints.
There's yet another angle. People have joint pain. What do they think? Arthritis, right? And
right.
they don't think of parasites. We have the human body can contain over 100 or host over 130 different parasites, more than something, I don't know what it is, 150, but it's a lot. And these parasites in their excretions yield toxins, and those toxins can cause inflammation in the joints, and often do. And they'll be misdiagnosed for arthritis in almost every case. Does the doctor tell the patient, please go and get an anti-parasite protocol from your health food store, capsules, and do that? No, they usually don't. And anyhow, it could be iron that's causing it.
It could be iron, yeah.
It's a jungle out there.
And the iron or dysregulation of iron can be, you know, affecting the pituitary gland that controls hormones. Iron in the pancreas can destroy it and lead to diabetes. What else? It will feed the dormant microbiome that exists in the blood. And we are now seeing more and more live blood analysis showing various life forms in the blood of the vaxxed and on occasion the blood of the unvaxxed who have been spiked. And that is likely from the iron that is being liberated from destroyed red blood cells.
And what destroys the red blood cells?
The spike protein.
Okay, we need to remind people over and over again about that.
Yeah.
So when you're around other people who are your vax opposite, and i.e. they've been vaccinated, and you're getting shed upon, every spike protein you take on board in your body will go into your bloodstream and will destroy red blood cells, liberating the iron from the heme.
Yep.
You don't want that. That's bad.
Yeah, we had one person in the shedding group report that, when she's been spiked, within a day or so, she has sepsis. I mean, blood poisoning from the released iron and whatever microbes she's harboring in the bloodstream are feasting on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What role does bacteria play with mitigating iron? Does it do anything? That some bacteria.
The iron, and usually it's the pathogenic forms. They love it. Iron is used for growth. It fuels uh-huh. growth, and that includes uh-huh. cancer.
Right.
So iron's not something you want to be taking supplementally unless it's legitimately required. And you would have to run several blood panels to determine someone's iron status. And really, the gold standard is, if you're looking for iron overload, a liver biopsy. I mean, they do have an MRI, very sensitive MRI, that can maybe do that now, but I don't know how many places around the country actually offer that. But it's not something to be taken haphazardly. When iron is contributing to this lipid peroxidation mm-hmm. that's happening, when the person is microclotting and becoming hypoxic, at the level of the capillaries and the individual cells, this iron is driving the production of free radicals, oxidative stress that's damaging cell membranes and basically frying them through oxidation. And that's where you're getting the formation of these toxic aldehydes.
The picture you sent me today of the woman's hand,
yeah,
which was going blue in the fingers, that looked necrotic potentially to me. I don't know if it'll go there. I hope it doesn't. But it's just
well, this
so
microclotting is it's very pervasive now. I think mm-hmm. you know it's happening, but I think at least initially people are not aware of it. And until, you know, a certain area of the body, the legs or the fingers or the toes or whatever, turn blue.
All right. That's not to say it's necessarily ischemic. It's doing other things. It is shutting down the blood, so I guess
it is. Mm-hmm. It is. It's a circulation issue for sure. I mean, it's both components in the blood that are clumping and also the endothelium, which the lining of the blood vessels is not, you know, it doesn't have the elasticity to expand and contract normally because it's damaged.
Right. We're looking into some products that can allegedly repair the damaged endothelium, which will be very interesting. We don't know enough about it yet. We're looking into it. So we'll be back reporting on that at some point. Okay. Very good on the iron. some of you are probably asking, well, what do you recommend on vitamin D? I have stopped my vitamin D for now because I know my body is absorbing and storing it. And I could generally do pretty well without it. Go out in the sun for 5 minutes and I'm loaded. So I used to take 5,000 a day like everybody else, but a lot of people take a lot more than that. So our recommendation is our recommendation, and it's not something I don't know. We don't want to tell people exactly what to do, never. But don't overdo it. If you're going to take vitamin D3, just remember, it does store up in the body. So,
with potentially adverse consequences, you do have the potential of basically calcifying your soft tissues.
Right.
And as Jeff was saying earlier, the typical blood test for vitamin D is not looking at the correct form. It's looking at the storage form and not really the biologically active form that's doing the heavy lifting. And the danger with taking excessive vitamin D through supplementation or food, it's added to a number of foods now, is that you accumulate these sky-high levels that can dock onto your vitamin D receptors and not allow them to do what they want, what they need to do, what they're supposed to do.
Gums up the works.
So when you need the active form, it can't dock onto the receptor because it's being blocked by this excessive amounts of the inactive form. So I think that needs to be rethought at this stage. Again, people have been taking this, you know, super physiological amounts of vitamin D now for 3 years. And I think some people are starting to have, whether they know it or not, adverse effects from it. If you look up hypervitaminosis with vitamin D, you'll see some symptoms that, well, we're hearing about, abdominal pain,
mm-hmm.
Among others. But some would argue that this whole idea that we're all vitamin D deficient because we live in the northern latitudes
appears to be potentially a bogus argument.
Yes.
It just
yes.
doesn't seem to hold any water. All right. Briefly, from what you did send, you want me to read the underlined parts? You can comment
sure.
on that.
Yeah.
All right. In fact, vitamin D supplementation will negatively affect the important vitamin A/vitamin D ratio, which strongly affects calcium and iron transport. There is a clinical trial which will be fascinating to follow, which studies parathyroid hormone in the progression of COVID-19. A study of hyperparathyroidism indicates that the spontaneous ground glass opacities can form due to diffuse calcification, again, coming from an overdose of vitamin D.
Yeah, and so this was pertaining to COVID-19.
Right.
Because it looked like these people were vitamin D deficient, but when they gave them vitamin D, it didn't make any difference. And then they realized that it was a more of a metabolic issue rather than vitamin D, and having to do with probably the parathyroid gland. I think the jury's out on that. But we have an interesting video. It's a little over an hour. It was an hour and a half, maybe. Talking about this whole topic of this myth that we're all vitamin D deficient, the harm that can come from just this indiscriminate supplementation.
It's a very important video. It's too long for us to play here, obviously, but it'll go up in headlines tonight. And it says simply in the title, "The Vitamin D Deficiency Lie." The vitamin D deficiency lie. It's a video. So we'd urge you to take a look at that at your own time and convenience and consider it. Okay. What's next? Ivermectin. We have
ivermectin?
We've got this ivermectin influencer. You want to do that?
Danny Lemoy, who was the founder of Dirt Road Discussions.
Yes.
Apparently, I've never listened to it, but he was a well-known figure and promoter of the use of ivermectin. And sadly,
prophylactically, urging them to take a daily dose of veterinary grade, i.e. the horse paste, ivermectin, and told his thousands of followers to give the drug to children. He died of a common side effect of that medication. He died suddenly.
Yeah. So
be careful. We don't say ivermectin doesn't work or hasn't helped or hasn't saved lives, but Erica was the first, I think, that I ever heard to caution people, do not take this prophylactically. Take it cautiously, advisedly, if you're sick, and maybe 3 days, and then stop. Maybe. But we're not.
It is a drug, and I think being a drug, it has, pharmacological effects, physiological effects that need to be respected. And there's no question it has its benefits, but like any drug, they've got to be weighed against the potential risks, and there are risks. So. And this looked to be a little bit of a smear piece against ivermectin.
I think it was. Yeah.
He did have Lyme disease. I did figure that much out. He had long-term Lyme, and at some point he discovered ivermectin, and it was, life-changing for him.
He
became a ardent supporter of it, and there's a lot of people dying suddenly lately, so
a lot of people.
We could speculate all day long why that is.
I know. Not just the vaxxed. Nope. Okay. In headlines again, when we post here, we'll post shortly. The vitamin D deficiency lie, please take a look at that video and think. You choose. But don't take ivermectin prophylactically. It's got its place, as Erica always said. Use it when you need it. And that's it.
And the one thing I am noticing, just to wrap up there, is whether this is true or not, I don't know. I don't have a big enough sampling to really say this with any certainty, but it looks as though the more you use it, the less effective it becomes.
Well, wouldn't you acclimatize to it?
Habituate to it. I don't know because there's at least six different mechanisms of action.
Right.
And
which one is the problem? I don't know.
Right.
This guy Danny Lemoy, just to finish this off. Just before 7 a.m. on March 3rd, Danny Lemoy posted an update in his hugely popular pro-ivermectin telegram group, Dirt Road Discussions. Happy Friday, all you poisonous horse paste eating survivors. Hours later, he was dead. So there we go. Just words to the wise. Think and do your research. We're happy to help the best of our ability here, as we always do. Okay, let's go to our COVID Chronicles human readers and see what we have here. Where do you want to go next?
We could do death from shedding.
Is that in the batch tonight?
Yep.
All right, let's see. Rashes from shedding. Shedding, but where's death from shedding? I've got to find it.
Top row.
There it is. Got it. Okay. All right, here it is. It's short. This is truly frightening. We know of a young man who did not take the kill shot, but his wife did, and they found this 29-year-old cold and purple in the morning. He fell asleep and never woke up. He did not take the shot. We are healthy and need to know the truth. His wife did take the shot. Get on the phone and demand immediate criminal and medical investigations now. Every day, contact detectives and lower-level politicians. I don't know where that goes. It ends with a period there. But okay, so there we go. There's apparently another shedding case. It's
well, that
anecdotal.
Was in response to Diamond and
Silk.
Silk, yes. Who the sister says that who was it? It was Silk that died.
Silk said that her sister Diamond was a casualty of shedding.
Yes.
Period. And that was what Silk said. Yeah.
So this was a comment to that video. So it is happening.
The other thing with spike protein is that we've always talked about receptors, mentioning two or three of them, ACE2 and a couple more. Well, it turns out, dear friends, that apparently the spike protein has at least 25, 26 and counting receptors that it can bind to in your body. It has a field day. It's not running around looking for ACE2. There are close to 30 apparently known receptors now that are out there that we know the spike will bind to. Think about that when you're talking about shedding and the risks therein. There's another reason to be concerned. It just gets crazier.
They make a big deal of the ACE2, and certainly that was the primary, but there are a few on red blood cells. There's some on platelets. Different types, not necessarily
just where you
ACE2.
Want to spike. See, that's probably why it's so successful at destroying red blood cells. There are receptors there for it. It bombs on and fragments, fractures the blood cell. Off goes the iron one way, and off goes the heme the other. And the heme is toxic
that
when
could
it's
be
unattached.
I mean, when red blood cells are misshapen, they don't fit well through the tiny capillaries.
No.
I mean, that's you've got something like sickle cell going on. You know, they're misshapen. They don't carry the iron right.
Nope. Okay, next.
What about this?
What?
I was going to say myocarditis reality
there
check.
We go. Sure.
This is a little heartbreaking for these. This is somebody new. Mm-hmm. New member to the group who apparently is unaware how serious myocarditis or pericarditis is.
Right. Go ahead.
All right, I'll start. Can anyone tell me how long it has taken to recover from pericarditis?
Well, let me stop you right there. Hold on. I hope a lot of you listening said, what? What do you mean, recover from pericarditis? Okay, go ahead.
I have been sick almost a month and was diagnosed last Friday. When I do anything such as showering, cooking, and folding clothes, I am wiped out. I have chest pain and shortness of breath and clammy sweats. All right, one reply. I am so sorry for your suffering. I was lied to and kept having the goalposts moved on my recovery period. Please don't get disillusioned if you are being told a few weeks and you aren't and you're not better. There's nothing worse than being lied to. The reality is that they cannot tell you. Be ready for the long haul. I am 19 months in a living hell because they pass it off as a minor quick fix. I didn't really understand the severity of my situation when I really should have been completely informed about the consequences of such a diagnosis and how to proceed with a health and recovery plan.
Right.
The only truth I got was on platforms like this. I wish you all the best. Rest, 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 and very minimal exercise in the meantime.
Okay. 1 year on for me, says the next person. 1 year, this person has had it. I was doing triathlons and marathons before this all started. Now, a little bit of clean or 30 minutes of gentle exercise, and I'm done. I feel so shuddered all the time. I used to have a nice 47 beat per minute resting heart rate. Now it's all over the place. Still off work, as my job is an HCA on a busy, heavy ward. It's hospital clinical assistant or what? I don't know, something. Now having to think about changing my job of 20 years. So sick of this. Then when I go to the hospital because of bad chest pains and a high BP rate or a high heartbeat rate, I get accused of, you should see the spelling of this one, sorry. I get accused of being a hypochondriac, as my bloods do show slight raises in troponin level, but the ECG is fine. I hate this so much, I want my life back. This is another person who's suffering 25 hours a day. It's awful. And someone adds on to that, I have all the same symptoms. Be careful doing so much. Rest when you can. Sleep when you can. I am going on 2 years now, but I have both Mayo and Perry. Go ahead.
Original poster says, I've been pushing myself too hard. I thought if I start doing things around the house, I would start getting better. I feel awful tonight. Word of advice, please don't. Rest. Keep that heart rate down. And an original poster says, thank you. My resting heart rate has been quite high. Next person says, I've been suffering 18 months. Despite not having any more fluid, I'm still having trips to the emergency department with heart attack-like episodes. Another one says, 1 year and still going for me. Same symptoms. Original poster says, oh my goodness, I pray it doesn't wipe me out that long. And he says to her, well, I hope not too. I am tired of this shit show. Another one says, September last year, and I don't feel much better. I tried resting, tried pacing myself, and it's like two steps forward and several steps backwards every damn time. I wish you every success with your recovery. And another one, my partner was told 7 to 10 days. He's now at 19 months.
See?
There were several more. I cut it off there, but there was just endless.
Well, I don't know. It's and there's so many people. It is said by some that every single person who has taken the bioweapon injection has pericarditis and or myocarditis, one or the other or both. We don't know for sure, but that's been said. So not a happy thing. Most creatively misspelled word of the day in all these readers that we do, the word acquired, spelled A-Q-U-I-S-E-D.
I think that was accused. Accused.
Acquired, accused. Yes, and then hypochondriac was another good one, but that's a second place one. All right. Anyhow, people are writing on their phones and they're in a hurry and they misspell words and the auto finish doesn't do it right.
And don't forget, they're in probably a lot of pain when they're doing this.
I would think. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? You want to grab one more reader? We can. We've got another minute or two here.
How about Shedding Misery?
Go ahead. Yeah.
It depends on the exposure. This is regarding shedding. I pretty much cannot see my sister anymore unless we keep a great distance and are outside or have all the doors and windows open. I mean, I could see her, but then I would never be off my period. She is unjabbed. Symptoms occurring from any exposure are either instantly to within a few hours or a day. Recovery depends on the severity of the symptoms. I went to Costco 3 days ago, and my right ear is still plugged. I pretty much don't touch anyone anymore and see the people I love outside my immediate family rarely and with caution. It's sad, but the state of things. I wish there were communities we could find, but that seems impossible with all the suppression of information going on. And unless the unjabbed are also avoiding the jabbed, they shed just as bad.
All right, here's a reply to that. I know we do not see certain family members who are always around the jabbed. We just stay away from them. I, too, am sensitive. First-hand shedding causes shingles, and second-hand causes headaches and joint pain. It takes too long for me to recover to make it worth making any new friendships. I understand having clogged ears. This is something that I suffered with 6 months ago, and I didn't think I would improve. I started using peroxide some days, one part alcohol and one part vinegar, recommended by an ENT, and Nitrulo air drops work really well. My ears are not completely back to normal, but they have improved. I wear a neck gaiter over my ears, nose, and mouth when I go outside. I get speckled blood coming from my nose and clogged ears when I don't wear it. I can only go outside for a short amount of time because jabbed people are all around me. I have to make sure no one is outside because I will get shingles if they are. It is so crazy to live this way. So just to give you an idea of what's going on out there, it's quite an ugly, agonizingly difficult terrain for a lot of people just to be around the vaxxed for moments.
Yeah, it's hard to believe, but it's out there. I mean, we had our one guest there a while back. It was Cindy, right?
Yeah.
Who described the experience of her sister coming for a visit, and it was fine until... Yeah. A quick hug, you know, a little bit of a brush on the cheek and down for the count.
Right. Okay. That's going to do it for tonight. Great job as always. Thank you on behalf of all those out there who would like to thank you. And we're here to help as much as we possibly can. That's what we do. So
okay.
Thank you.
My pleasure, Jeff. Okay. All right. Good night, everyone.
We'll be right back with another hour for you.